Billy S. from Las Vegas.
I'm not going to do a fifth step, so there's a lot of things I'm not going to share with you. My name is Billy Smith. I am definitely an alcoholic. I'm sober through the grace of a very loving God and people like you in the fellowship called Alcoholics Anonymous. It's always an honor to be asked to do anything in Alcoholics Anonymous, much less to think that I have some kind of a message for someone. I really want to thank Harlan for asking me to come up, and I'll tell you something. I don't want to like blow smoke at the committee, but you guys are in the top 5 or 10% of where you treat us. You stayed in contact. It's been awesome the way we've been treated. It's not always like that. It's not always like that. And glad my good friend Joe got to speak this morning, and Minnie, and get to see Wayne Butler again. And I just love him. I crank on him all the time. Give you a little bit about your speaker this morning, how well I got it put it together. I'm one of those guys, you know, all of them don't, and they don't have it put together. I got it all together. 2 weeks ago, I was in just a minor accident. I'm talking about minor. Guy's fender touched my tire on my truck. That's all. Didn't touch my truck. Little scratch on his. He insisted on calling the cops. So he did. And so for the next 4 or 5 days, I chopped this guy up in my mind several times. We had several more accidents together in my mind. And each time I made him look bad and his family look bad. And one time he went to prison, you know. And I would have took it further than 5 days, but I figured since the accident was my fault, I'll let him off the hook. So that's your afternoon speaker. Since most of the disease lies in our mind, so that's what I'm working with, but not all of it. And I'm one of those people, you got really some speakers that from all different backgrounds, and I've heard Wayne and I just love, be sure and come tonight because I love Wayne and I love my man Joe. But I have a different perspective of it, and I don't speak for Alcoholics Anonymous in Las Vegas. This is what I've come to understand in AA and through a very loving sponsor, and we all see it a little bit different. The alcoholic mind just sees it a little bit different. And what I like to talk about is a lot is what my man is William Silkworth. Talk about the allergy of the body. People around are saying now that alcoholism doesn't have anything to do with your drug of choice. Well, I don't know. They should take chapter 3 out and throw it away, I guess. I don't know. Because it talks about lack of control of a thing called alcohol. And I am from North Carolina and made some of the greatest white whiskey in the world. And it did for me what it was supposed to. But I have an allergy. Silkworth says people like me, it's simply this. I drink for cause and effect. What kind of effect do I like? What it does is just lets me go play. I have 3 brothers. If you line us up, we look alike. We are entirely different, mentally and vitally. Silkworth says for a guy like me to stand up here and talk about all the underlying causes, what the book says. But the book says alcohol is a symptom of this disease that I have. And one of the symptoms is I have an allergy of the body. Once I put it in my system, I don't know what your drink of choice is, but mine is just more. That's it. And if I could control it, you'd have a different speaker. When my brothers start to drink, they do something really weird. They start to lose control. Wow, isn't that weird? I start drinking. Pretty soon I can dance and fight and, boy, I can just go play. You know what I'm talking about? I remember I was like 15 or 16 year old and I was at this bootlegger's house and he had a good looking daughter. And she had what I wanted and I was going to any lengths to get it except talk to her. I couldn't talk to her. I was willing to go to any other lengths, but I couldn't talk, you know. And a guy gave me a big glass of white whiskey, and I was at a conference a few years ago, and I heard a guy say when he took his first drink, he could feel his fingernails grow, and his hair stood up on his head, and I thought, wow, man, if you I wish I'd drink some of that. But that's not what happened to me. What happened to me was, I don't want to tell you exactly how long, but in 20, 25 minutes or 30 minutes, What happened was I just felt comfortable. And when I drank that alcohol, I just knew that, and I didn't know at the time that it was a cure for alcoholism. I didn't know it was what fixed this big hole in my gut. And I know it was a good thing, because, man, I'll tell you one thing, I was just like rapping to this girl, and she just thought I was something else, you know. And the truth of it was, if the fight had started or anything, I could have just been a part of it. So alcohol does something for me, not to me. It does something to my brothers. First of all, it makes them tipsy, and they don't like that feeling. Makes them feel like they're losing control, and they don't like that feeling. If you're an alcoholic, you know exactly what I'm talking about. It makes me feel like I'm gaining control. Pretty soon, I'm going to be there. I never get there, but I'm always trying. I pass out right before I get there. You know. I have great intentions to get there and to get her. Most of the time, it didn't happen, but I told everybody it did. You know, I know all you guys are honest, and you told the truth. I was raised in a home that most people would dream of. It was a great home. You hear these other guys, and I don't understand anything about child abuse. Nothing. I was raised with two loving parents, and my mother and my father were my biggest fans. Even when I made it to Skid Row, they were my biggest fans. My father invented the first machine to separate the leaf from the stem to the tobacco. My one brother owns his own company. My other brother makes six figures and has for years, and there's a thing about putting him on the board of directors of the company he works for, and the other brother put in all the international airports for the federal government. And at the age of 17, I'm standing in front of a judge getting a 6-month suspended sentence for 3 years, and that's their life and that's mine. And I had the same chance as those kids, but I have this big empty hole in my gut, and the last thing I want to do would be like my brothers, because they were squares. And I wanted to be cool. And that's my life. And I can give you the next 23 years of it, and it's all the same, and it's a progressive disease. I joined the Navy to see the world and became a drunk. I didn't plan it that way. There's a lot of things you can do in the Navy, but there's some of the things you can't do. I was in Iwakuni, Japan, and one morning I loved Iwakuni, Japan, because they had two things I needed. They had them houses with the whiskey and the girls in the same house. And you don't have to talk. You just go and you get both. And as long as I didn't have to talk, people don't understand this, you know, because I talk all the time now. But I drank with a lady in Las Vegas, and they know her, Fran Benson. She'll tell you that I sat in that bar for 10 years and never said hello to her. But I went to that bar, and I did what, went to that place where they got that two things I need. And I got up to go back to the ship, and there's a lot of things you can do in the Navy, but you can't miss the boat. And I got there, and the boat was gone, you know. And there's a lot of things you can do, but you can't do that. And so they took my stripes away from me, and it really rattled my cage. I thought they was a horrible thing, this U.S. Navy. I couldn't wait to get out. One other thing I'd like to tell you about, I'd like to tell you about a time that I'm 19 years old. I'm in Long Beach, California. That's where I was stationed. At 19 years old, I could go in any bar in Long Beach and order a drink. You had to be 21 to do that. They never asked me for my ID. I don't know if I looked like I needed a drink or if I just looked older than I was. First of all, I don't say nothing. I don't bother nobody. What I do is I drink. I try to get where I can, but the time I get where I can, it's way too late. I'm already past that. And so I'm standing out there, and in Long Beach is not like Las Vegas. They close the bars. Shut them right down. 2 o'clock in the morning. Can you imagine that? And now you got to quit drinking. So I went across the street. They used to have an old thing down there. I don't know if they even got it no more, called the Pike. And up from it, there was an old bar there called the old Saratoga Bar. And that's where I drank. You know, if you were anybody, you did not drink there. You know, that's the place where people like me drank. And so I walked out of there and went across to Williams Park, and I passed out, and I woke up. I'm 19 years old. I woke up before the bar opened. The bar opened at 6 o'clock in the morning. And I'm out there with all these old guys going like this, right? You know what I'm talking about, 35, 40 years old, going like that. Hey, listen, when you're 19, 35 and 40 is old. Now it's like they're kids. But when you're 19, and I'm watching these guys, and I'm thinking, how in the world can they let themselves get to like that? How can they do that? How can they get back to like that, that they have to have that drink? And when we go into the bar, they finally open it. I got folding dollars, you know, and they got the change and stuff. And I go up and I order, I said, just stay right here, buddy. Hit this shot glass two or three times and give me a short beer back, and then you can wait on them guys, because I had to. And he would hit it two or three times to get my heart started. I'm just like, I don't know I'm an alcoholic. I just want to have three or four drinks so I can chill out, so I can go back to the ship and do what I have to do, so I can come back over to chill out, so I can go back to do what I have to do. Then I'd watch him take, and I didn't think about this for a long time. But now I remember, and I think it's exactly how it happened, but I'd watch him take that for them guys that were shaking. He'd put it in an old-fashioned glass, and he'd pour that shot in there so they could get it to their mouth without spilling it. And I'm sitting there looking to these guys going, God, if I was that bad, dang, I wouldn't be doing it. Can't you guys see what you're doing to yourself? What the hell is the matter with you? The sad story of that is, if you come in and took a picture, right, with a camera, if you look at the picture, I'm sitting right in the middle of it. Isn't it amazing how my mind can see what you're doing, but the alcoholic mind never picks up? The alcoholic mind never gives the alcoholic the picture. It just won't do it. It's just like I'm just chilling out. I'm just having a few drinks. Well, I know my brother's got it going on, but I really don't want it going on. This is the kind of life they chose, and this is the kind of life I chose. I'm thinking, this is what I'm really doing. Have no idea that at the age of 19 that I could have been a member of a thing called Alcoholics Anonymous. Been a bona fide member, because you either got this disease, you're either pregnant, or you don't. You know, you either got it or you don't. And I got it. So, of course, talks about the all different types. I do a big book study. I've been doing it for a lot of years. It got big. I took it out of my house and put it to another place. And I always go over Silkworth. We take 2 or 3 weeks just to do Silkworth. And so I was going, I was telling these guys, we see other people drink with impunity. And one of these idiots that I sponsor got about 4 months, says, Billy, what does impunity mean? I said, I don't have the slightest idea. I've been saying it for a lot of years. Why don't we get a dictionary and look it up? So I got this dictionary, so I keep this dictionary now. And it says, to drink without consequence, to drink without punishment. My brothers and non-alcoholics can drink without consequence and can drink without punishment. I got out of the Navy, went to Florida, got a good job, got it going on. Just blowed everything out. Wound up in Las Vegas. Told my mother, I said, I'm going to Las Vegas. She says, I'll help you pack. My mother loved me more than anything in the world. I can look back, I thought it was funny then, but I can look back, that must have really broke her heart to have to say something that like to me. Came to Las Vegas. A guy told me, he said, you need to go to Las Vegas. They got 24-hour bars and showgirls. I thought, what a great combination. And I got there, and the night I got there, I had like $100 and some on me. It was every dime I had, and went into the Fremont Hotel and casino to have a couple of beers to chill out. Just chill my feet. And woke up with nothing, which I always did. Not knowing that once I took the first drink that I was powerless over the next and the next and the next one. I'm on Fremont Street, I have no place to go, and I got one phone number, and I called this guy, and he took me in, and was really a neat guy. I just made amends to him like 2 years ago, because his name kept coming up in my mind, and I couldn't figure out. I went and told my sponsor. I said, boy, this guy's name comes up all the time. He says, well, you must owe him money. I said, no, I never borrowed none from him. He said, well, what part did he play in your life? I said, well, I lived in this house. He says, for how long? I said, for 2 months. He said, did you pay rent? And I said, no. He said, well, you owe him too much rent. He said, did you eat his food? I said, yeah. He said, well, you owe him too much for food. What year was that? I said, 1963. He said, what do you think rent was? I said, $100 a month. He said, okay, you owe him $200 for that. We'll charge you another $200 for food. He says, when was that? I said, 1963. He said, well, then you owe him about 33 years interest. I said, that's a little strong, isn't it? He says, figure it out and give me a figure. So I come back, I said, how does 2,000 sound? He said, that sounds good. So I finally tracked him down. I called around, I found his mother in Florida, and I finally tracked him down, and I sent him a check for 2,000 about 2 years ago. He said, I sent too much, but he never sent them back. To show you what a nice guy he was, he called me up about 5 days later. He'd been divorced from Kathy for 20 years. There's great human beings that's not alcoholic in this world. And I've been coming in contact with a lot of them. A lot of people played a big part in my life that has nothing to do with Alcoholics Anonymous. He said, I'm glad you sent the $2,000 because I found out that Kathy was in trouble and I sent her $1,000. I said, you know something, Bobby? You're just a good guy. You can't help yourself. You don't even have to drink. You don't need any kind of program. You got it going on. There's people like that. So I was in Florida and I came out to Las Vegas. I learned how to live in Las Vegas. Bobby put up with me about 2 months and he couldn't stand me no more and he asked me to leave. And that's the way it is with me. When you first meet me, you like me. After about a week, you're not sure. After 3 or 4 weeks, you can't stand me. I don't mean to be that way, and I don't mean to use you. It's just part of the game. I have to do it. And I wound up coming from a home. My father, we was real poor when I was young, and my father got lucky in business. And when we had a home in Florida, had a living room upstairs and a living room downstairs with a lot of bathrooms. And after I was in Las Vegas a very short time, I learned how to drink in Las Vegas. I learned, if you know, I'm the kind of guy that always feels like I'm nothing, so I don't bother people. I don't want nothing to do with you because I know I'm just a piece of garbage. I can look in the mirror and know, you don't have to tell me who and what I am. I already know that. And so I just don't bother anybody, you know. And some people got me a job as a shill. A shill's a guy that starts a game and you get $1 an hour, and I thought I'd made a score. My brother's making 6 figures and I'm making $1 an hour, and I think I've hit it big time, $1 an hour. And I got a little place, and I got drunk one time with my check and I didn't pay it, and I went in and had all my stuff nailed up on the boards, nailed on that little old room, and they wouldn't let me have my stuff. Wouldn't worth anything to nobody else, just to me. I learned how to drink in Las Vegas. I'd write a Keno ticket and I'd write a 50 cent six spot, and you could always bum up 50 cents. And when they would always see me coming, I'd give them the 50 cents and they'd always give me one or two drink tickets. You're supposed to get one every now and then, and they'd always give me one or two. And one time I hit 5 out of 6, and I still remember it made $55, and I went and cashed my ticket, and I give the dealers $30, and I kept $25. And now, if you're not alcoholic, you won't understand that. But if you're alcoholic, you might understand if I explain it to you. The money ain't gonna mean nothing to me. What I need is those drink tickets. That's what's gonna make me go. So the next day I go in, I'm like this because I got this $25. Here I am, not even 30 years old, and I'm just like the guys I seen at the Long Beach thing, and they see me come in, I had my 50 cents, and I write my ticket, and they'd fold my ticket and hand it to me, and I'd open the ticket up, and there would be 8 or 9 drink tickets in there, and they said, Billy, that'll hold you for a while. Then they'd go, get lucky, right? And I'd walk out and think, as long as I got my drink tickets, you ask me how I'm doing, I'll tell you, not that bad. So then I had just $2 or $3, I had that room, they had the boards on my thing, I needed that stuff in there. I had 2 white shirts of wooden white and 2 black pants of wooden black. But I'm a crap dealer and you need those things. And I went downtown, I had $3 or $4 on me, and I went downtown, I won a lot of money, a lot. $60 or $70. When you're broke, $60 or $70 is a bankroll, it's a lot of money. And I went back and flashed it at that guy that had my stuff, and they put all my stuff in a carnation box, and I paid him for the back rent, and I went to pay him for another week's rent, and he wouldn't take it. He said, we don't want you staying here no more. So I got my stuff, and I'm walking down Fremont Street, but I got $30 or $40 in my pocket. And if you walk up and ask me how I'm doing, I would tell you I'm doing great. Everything's fine. There's nothing wrong. I never knew how bad that sound till like 2 or 3 years ago. I have a daughter, since she was 12 years old, she's been drinking and drugging. She's 32. She still is. I've lived with it. There's a dull pain always inside of me. It doesn't go away. Do I believe in God? Absolutely. But we all get crosses to carry, and some of them are bigger than others. It's the only child I have. She come home one time, and she's been living in the street. She couldn't live with me. She's lived with me, I don't know how many times. She live and kick her out, live and kick her out, and she's living with me again. And she came home that time, and she walked up, and she weighed about 80 or 85 pounds. And I'd never seen her look that bad in my whole life. And she said, Dad, can I come in and take a shower? Because I haven't had a shower in 4 or 5 days or 6 days or a week or whatever it was. And I said, sure, come on in, but you know you can't stay here. She said, Dad, I know that. But come on in and take a shower and clean up. She says, okay, if I go to the refrigerator. And I said, sure, honey. Go ahead. There's plenty of stuff in there that I've cooked. And I watched this kid eat about 4 times in 5 hours. And I told her when she come out taking a shower, and I said, you know, honey, I've never seen you look this bad. You look almost like death. She said, well, Dad, I'm living in the back of a pickup, and we got a mattress in there now, and it's not that bad. I thought, that's right. The mattress makes a difference, honey. She said, Dad, you don't understand. Sleeping on that hard mattress makes a difference. It's not that bad. And here's a beautiful home, really nice home that she could be living in. But she's got a mattress in there now. And that's the alcoholic mind. It just doesn't give you the picture. Now we got the mattress in there, and it's not that bad. 29 years old, I met a lady that sort of drank like I did. She had two things I needed. She had an apartment, and she had a car. So I married her. And I'm not that bad, Jesus, you know. She said later on she thought that she could change my life. And she's the Eskimo that changed my life. I didn't know at the time. But for the first time, I looked at this lady, and I started liking her. I didn't love her, but I started liking her. And I started trying to change my life, and I went to a hospital. And I was laying in a hospital down in Santa Barbara, California, and they told me I wouldn't live any longer. That my liver quit and everything had stopped. And I was at the hospital. I was in the hospital for like 6 or 7 days, and this is the second part of this disease. I left that hospital, and it says, and I told this guy, I said, all right, if alcohol's the problem, let's just quit. I spent the next 11 years quitting. On page 44, this is what it says. If when you start to drink and you can't control it, you are probably alcoholic. Then if you want to stop and you find out that you can't stop, that's the disease of alcoholism. On page 44, I didn't make it up. On page 23 and 24, it talks about, it goes on to about the mental thing, that there come a time, if you have got the same disease that I do, that you will have no mental defense against the first drink. See, you hear people in the rooms go, and I hate this statement, I don't drink no matter what. Well, let me tell you something. I drink no matter what. That's pretty good if you're 30 days sober. I don't drink no matter what. That's even good at 60 days sober, maybe a year. But somewhere along the line, if you don't take some kind of spiritual actions and put them in your life to treat this spiritual malady that I have, you too will go drink. And I see people with 10, 12 years and say, I don't drink no matter what. And I thought, you're, and I tell them all every time, you need to go do a third step. You skipped it. I don't know what you did, but you need to go do a third step, because there's got to be some kind of spiritual life that I didn't have. And see, when I would quit drinking, this emptiness would set in, and it just drives me crazy. I go from suicide to homicide real quick. I don't want to hurt you, me, you know, I want to kill every son of a gun I see. You know, and I get where I can't be around anybody. And if you're anything like I am, I stayed sober for quite a few years. I did other things. The book talks about it, heavy sedatives. I did some heavy stuff because the doctors give it to me. And I looked one of them up. It's called Sponzuli. It says stop extreme alcoholics from shaking. And went out to play golf one morning. I was playing in a tournament, and I was playing pretty good. After the first day, I was in third place. It's just a local tournament in Las Vegas, and first prize was $4,000, and I was really playing good. And I went out the second day, and I'm playing with the Mantle boys and another guy, and it's June, and I'm sweating, and I told Roy, look at me, I'm just sweating and everything. And he says, no wonder you drink all them Cokes, they're just full of sugar, why don't you have a beer? I said, God, why didn't I think of that? I ain't had one in 6 or 7 years, give me one. And I had two beers, and I'd like to tell you that I fell down, and I would be lying to you. Absolutely. I tell everybody I putted better. I don't think that's true. But I went home and told my old lady, I said, look at me. I had two drinks at the golf course and nothing happened. I'm not nuts. I'm not crazy. She says, you are definitely crazy. I said, well, you know what? I'll tell you something, Inga. I wasted 7 good years of drinking. She says, you are completely out of your mind. Now, my mind didn't tell me when I picked up that drink what was going to happen for the next 4 months. Maybe it's like I'll just chill out and go to the 19th hole and meet her because I'm not getting along very good at home anyway. Or I put better or whatever it was. And my neighbor said, I heard you had a drink at the golf course. Why don't you come over and have a beer? And I said, I'll be right over. And I went over and I had 4 drinks and nothing happened. And I'd never did that in my whole entire life. If you're new here and you go back out, I hope she leaves or he leaves, you get fired. I hope the cops pick you up. I hope all kinds of things happen. Because if it does, maybe you won't tell yourself what I told myself that morning. There's nothing wrong with me. I made a mistake. There's nothing wrong. I'd got my health back. I went back to the gym. And I told my old lady, I said, when I get off the work tonight, I'm going to go down to the plush horse, my old stomping grounds, and I'll have a couple of drinks and I'll be home. And she called 10 o'clock the next day, when you coming home. And I said, don't call here no more. And hung the phone up. And the book gives you a test in there. It says, try some controlled drinking. Well, I passed it twice and failed it 3,463 times. And what happened was, when I started drinking again, I've heard people from the podium saying, and that's just their story, it's not mine. And when they started drinking again, it's like where they left off. That's not true with me. It's like I must have drank there for 7 years. My disease had progressed to where it was an absolute nightmare from the very start. Within 2 weeks, I'm a falling down drunk. And most of the time when I go drink, I can't even get drunk. The more sober I would get. I could get where I was falling, but I couldn't get drunk from here up. And I heard a guy say this, and I use things that people say only if it applies to my life. If it's my experience, I use it. I don't say things from the podium to impress you, because my sponsor says if I'm trying to impress you, I'm going to miss the one person that I came up here for, and I don't want to do that. And I remember standing in my front yard. I've been drinking about 14 months, and I realized that this is the way it's going to be. You can't get drunk and you can't get sober. Your life is over. It's 40 years old. And I used to tell myself stupid stuff like, what if you live to be 70 and you have to feel like this every day? And I said, I don't think so. And you know, I heard a guy say this and it applies to me. So I went and got a 9mm. I'm a hunter and fisherman and I got a lot of guns, and I went and got this 9mm. And I tell you one thing, I told myself, I don't want to do this no more. And I thought about my mom, and I said, she's going to think I did something wrong. Then I read or heard, if you do that, somebody else in your family will do that. And I got a girl in the second grade that's having massive problems. You ain't supposed to have problems in the second grade. And I remembered, and this is what it was. I had a mind that won't work, and I can't kill myself, and I got a body that won't die. What a lonely place to be, standing in my front yard, trying to kill myself. And I did it, and show you what kind of guy I am. I didn't want to do it in the house because I didn't want to mess up the carpet. I didn't want my daughter to come to see me when my brain's knocked out. I didn't want to see that. But I knew I could not stay here any longer. And this loving God, I think he looked down and says, I think he's ready. A week later, I didn't know it. I was going to be in a thing called Alcoholics Anonymous, and I had no idea. Oh, by the way, everybody give their sobriety date. I'll give you mine. My sobriety date is October the 18th, 1975. I used to have a different one. Because when I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I'd go home and roll that stuff up and smoke it. You know, the stuff's got no brand on it. And lay back and turn the music on and figure out what you guys said. Not too bad what that one girl said. But I went to a lot of meetings. And I went to one meeting, and this old broad, I didn't like her then. I don't like her now. She's still sober. And she said, if you keep smoking that stuff, you're going to get drunk. And I'm trying to figure out who told her. And she's just making a statement, but I went home and that old lady had that stuff laid out. And I said, I can't do that no more. And she says, why not? I said, they say if you do that, you get drunk. That's something, the first time in my life I've ever said, and I told her something I'd never said in my life. Already you people had me and I didn't know it. I said, I don't want to get drunk. I don't want no more of that. I don't know what they got. I don't really want what they got. I wouldn't even raise my hand and say I was an alcoholic. I would say my name is Bill, and they all stare. You know, I love that. They just stare. The day he's going to say it, I thought, come on outside and we'll talk about it, you know. And I was locked in the pissed off position, and I couldn't find a key. I just locked in there. I went from suicide to homicide so quick because I'm dealing with this untreated alcoholism. And if you're anything like me, it's not a safe place to be around a person like me when I'm not drinking. You're better off long ways away, because I don't care who you are and what you are. Maybe I can't whip you, but you got to go. I'm going to see to that. You know. And so I just go into meetings, and what I did was I went to a lot of meetings, and I would put the chairs up, and I was doing little things, and they say, you know, from a distance, they used to go, you keep coming back. And I'd think, come outside, and we'll talk about it. I went to the Alana Club one day, and I'm locked in a pissed-off position, and they got a guy in there they call Big Jim, and he started that AA crap at me, and I told him, I said, Jim, come outside, I'm going to change your face. I'm tired of you talking to me like that. And they called him Big Jim for a reason, because when he started getting up, he got up for a long time, and I thought, oh, not a good deal. This is not a good deal. You know, my paper mouth overloaded my paper ass, and here we go again. And he got up and he screamed at them guys, get this idiot a cup of coffee. He's trying to find somebody to run him out of here. And I'll tell you something, Billy, it ain't going to be me. Now get this idiot a cup of coffee. And he turned around and walked away. You know, and because he knew that I was scared to death. He knew that. He knew I didn't want to fight. I'm just looking for a drink. Please, you know, come up and touch me and make me feel better.